I'm curious about something. So by a show of hands from all of you at every single campus, even our guys at the prison campus, raise your hand if you've ever said something that you wish you could take back. Guys, get your hands up, all right? Husbands, I know better. Good. Every single one of us are in the same boat, right? We've all been there, all done that. We've all stuck our foot in the proverbial mouth, right? I tell you, I try to be someone of measured words. I try to make sure I measure my words and always say things I need to say and never get caught saying something I'm not supposed to say. But sometimes you just fail, right? A couple weeks ago, right before we started the fast, I was just like craving a burger. And so I drove through Wendy's. I'm like, I need to slam a couple burgers before this fast starts. And so I pull up and I begin to order, and I'm being really, really polite to the person on the other side of the little squawk box, all right? I'm like, yes, ma'am, I'll have 2 junior bacon cheeseburgers, hold the tomato, yes, medium fries will be great, yes, chocolate frosty, yes, ma'am, that's right. Total, thank you, ma'am, so much. I mean, I appreciate your help. And so I pull my car forward, and as I do that, there's this big old dude standing in the window like this. He's like, I'm not a ma'am. I'm like, I'm sorry, my radio was on and my truck's loud and couldn't hear you. You know, I'm so, you just sometimes you do this. And maybe you've done this one, all right? Many of us have done this one. You never do it again if you do it one time. You walk up to a lady and you say to her, oh, what are you having, a boy or a girl? And they look at you like, I'm not pregnant. You're like, oh, and you run away, right? I mean, we've all been there. We've all done that. We've all stuck our foot in our mouths and said something that we wish that we could take back. Well, today we're going to look at a lady who said the exact right thing at the exact right moment. You see, we're going to study this Q&A between this woman and Jesus today and how she answers this incredible question that Jesus asked her. But before we dive into that, let me give you a little background. Let me give you a little context on what's going on so that you can better understand and appreciate this story today. You see, when Jesus was born, the world was fractured. It was divided. There was a lot of separation going on. You see, the religious people lived on this side of the street, and the non-religious people lived over here on this side of the street. Men and women didn't get along. In fact, men would pray every single day, God, thank you that I wasn't born a slave, a Gentile, a dog, or a woman. You see, that's how they felt about each other. And so you can just appreciate there was this incredible amount of tension in the world during Jesus' days. It was ethnic group versus ethnic group versus ethnic group versus ethnic group. There was tension. There was division in the world. And one of the things that would bring people together was food. It was food. You see, you invited your friends to your house to sit at your dining room table to share a meal. But you would never, ever invite your enemies to your dining room table in your house to share a meal. In fact, you read through all the ancient texts. Many times they would describe their enemies with this one word, dog. Dog, that's how they would describe their enemies. Now, as Americans, I know it's hard for us to fathom that because, well, we have dogs as pets. They become an extension of our families. You know, man's best friend. We spend $34 billion a year on our dogs. But in Jesus' day, they were scavengers. They were scavengers. They lived on the outskirts of a city. They lived in the trash piles, the trash heaps, and they would scavenge for little scraps of food. And they would bark and they would growl and they would show their teeth. They were mean. And so before Jesus has this Q&A with this woman, he engages in this debate with the religious leaders of his day. And this entire debate is all about dietary issues. You see, these religious leaders accused Jesus and his disciples of not washing their hands. Now listen, there's more than just cleanliness ramifications to this, all right? There are spiritual ramifications to this. Because you were not allowed to go into the temple if you were unclean. And so Jesus looks at these religious leaders and he says to them, what's worse, going into the temple with unclean hands or unclean hearts like you guys? Boom, he dropped the mic. But he wasn't done yet. He picked it back up. Like, I'm not done yet, all right? And he said, on top of that, today I am declaring all food to be clean. Boom, dropped it again. And the crowd's like, what? What? And there's this murmuring going on. And they start asking, wow, if he can declare all food to be clean, then can he also declare all people to be clean? And so immediately after this debate, after this knockout, dragout that Jesus had with these religious leaders where he just leveled the playing field for any and all people, Jesus, for the first time in his adult life, leaves the country of Israel. He goes to this little city up in the northwest called Tyre. And it's actually an island about 1,000 yards off the main coast of Israel. And he goes to this town. And this town in Jesus' days was the epicenter of paganism. It was like the first century Las Vegas. That's what it was like. Now, to understand Tyre, I need to walk you back about 300 years and introduce you to a guy by the name of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was this incredible conqueror. And so he was marching up the coast of Israel when they come across this island city of Tyre. And his generals come to him and say, hey, we can't go over there. We can't get our armies across the water, so we just need to march on, just let them be. But no, that's not what Alexander, he never would accept, I can't do something. And so he then tells his soldiers, grab a basket, and we're going to build a bridge. And so all of his soldiers grab these baskets, and they start filling them full of rocks and dirt and sand, and they build a causeway. They build a land bridge that connects the mainland Israel to the city of Tyre. And when they finish, he marches across with his army across the bridge. They take the city of Tyre. And listen, the city of Tyre from that point forward becomes a major port city in the Mediterranean. I mean, sailors from all over the world would come and drop their anchors there on their boats because they wanted to experience the first century Las Vegas. And so the merchants from everywhere would come and they let their hair down and they would just experience any kind of sin that they could dream up. And so what happened in Tyre stayed in Tyre, all right? It was a first century Las Vegas. So any good Jewish man concerned about his reputation would never look at the city of Tyre, much less walk in to the city of Tyre. And so Jesus walks into the city of Tyre. And the very first thing he does is he talks to a woman. Scandalous, all right? Scandalous. I know we don't understand because we live in a different culture today, but I'm telling you, that just didn't happen. And on top of that, this woman is no ordinary woman. She has a daughter who has an evil spirit in her. And so here's Jesus in this unclean city talking to this unclean woman who's got a daughter with an unclean spirit in her. I'm telling you, there is no text in Scripture quite like what we're about to look at. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to see what Mark has to say about this. Mark chapter 7 is where we're going to be today. Mark chapter 7. We're going to see how Mark recounts this story of Jesus going to the city of Tyre and having this Q&A with this woman. Here's what it says, beginning in verse 24. Then Jesus left Galilee and went north to the region of Tyre. He didn't want anyone to know which house he was staying in, but he couldn't keep it a secret. Right away, a woman had heard about him, came and fell at his feet. Her little girl was possessed by an evil spirit, and she begged him to cast out the demon from her daughter. Since she was a Gentile born in Cyrene-Phoenicia, Jesus told her, first, I should feed the children, my own family, the Jews. It isn't right to take food from the children and throw it to the dogs. Wow. So what Jesus is doing is he's acknowledging, hey, there's this racial and ethnic tension between my people group, ma'am, and your people group. And I don't think he was calling her and her people group dogs to widen the gap between the two people groups. Quite the contrary. I think he was just testing her. I think he was asking her a question to see if she was going to be someone that he could work with to bridge the gap between the two. Just like Alexander bridged the gap between mainland Israel and the city of Tyre, Jesus wanted to see if this woman would help him bridge the spiritual an ethnic gap between these two people. Now, here's what you have to understand. As we read through the New Testament this year, you're going to see the same theme over and over and over and over again. It's all throughout the New Testament. So I want to make sure that we understand this concept of first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. You see, Jesus was born into the world to save the entire world from its sins. But Jesus was Jewish. He was from Israel. And so please understand this truth. Sequence does not indicate favoritism, but function. Sequence does not indicate favoritism, but function. You see, Jesus was born into the world, into a very specific people group. Just like you and I, we're Americans, he was Jewish. But what God said is that Jesus was going to come into the world through the Jews, but then he was going to go to the rest of the world. Now, let me try to help you understand this with an illustration, all right? Here's what's basically going on. Just imagine you're throwing a Super Bowl party, all right? Your team makes the Super Bowl. Now, we're Jag fans, so we have to make believe, all right? Just join me on this journey. All right, you're throwing a Super Bowl party. It's Super Bowl week. You want to invite some friends over. So you jump online. You send some emails out to your friends. Hey, show up at my house 6 p.m. Wear your jerseys. You know, bring a side dish. And we're going to have fun. We're going to watch the game. We're going to rate the commercials. We're going to party at halftime. It's just going to be a great time. Coming over at my house 6 p.m. Well, the day the Super Bowl happens, you're there in your house. You got the oven on, warming up your cheese dip, you know, and you're cooking things in the microwave. You got your jersey on, and you're vacuuming the house about 5 o'clock, and the doorbell rings. And you go, and you answer the door, and you look at the person behind the door, and you go, okay. And you look at your wife, like, what are you doing here, you know? And like, hey, we're here for the party. And you're thinking in your mind, you're an hour early, right? And so you have two choices in this moment. What are you going to tell them to do? Are you going to say, well, you know what, why don't you walk around the block a couple times, you know, and come back after three laps, you know, or go sit in your car, listen to music, when you see some other cars show up, then you can come on in. Or would you say, you know what, come on in, you sit on the couch, pregame is on, I got some other stuff to do, but people will be here shortly. You would probably say that. So here's what we have going on in this story. We have this Jewish man, Jesus, and this Syrophoenician woman, who shows up early to the party that God is throwing. And she seems to understand that God is going to be okay with this. Because I believe she understands that sequence isn't about favoritism. It's about function. And how do I know that? Well, listen to the answer she gives to Jesus in his question. Verse 28, here's what she said. She replied to Jesus, "That's true, Jesus. But even the dogs under the table are allowed to eat the scraps from the children's plate." What an answer. She says again, "That's true, Lord, but even the dogs under the table are allowed to eat the scraps from the children's plate." You see, what she's saying is, hey, you don't have to interrupt the meal. You don't have to take anything away from the kids for the dogs to get a few scraps. I mean, translation of a translation of translation. You can help the Gentiles without it hurting the Jews. Her answer was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And Jesus agreed. He agreed it was a brilliant answer. Listen to what he says. Next verse, verse 29. "Good answer!" Exclamation point. I mean, if he was a game show host, lights would be going off, buzzers, confetti coming down. He'd be like, "You just won. Good answer. Now go home. For the demon has left your daughter." And when she arrived home, she found her little girl lying quietly in bed, and the demon was gone. Now, I know this story loses a bunch of its scandalous nature because of the world that we live in today. It's different than these biblical times. So let me just try to put this on a shelf so all of us can get our hearts and our heads and our hands around what is going on here, okay? Here's the first thing we need to learn from this story. It's simply this. Jesus is inviting people under the table to sit at the table. Jesus is inviting people under the table to sit at the table. Listen, as we go through the New Testament, we're going to see time and time and time again. When people wanted to sit down and have a meal with Jesus, Jesus would sit down and have a meal with them. It didn't matter who it was. And so let me illustrate it this way, all right? Imagine this table is a table in a coffee shop, all right? Sitting in a coffee shop, hanging out. Jesus wants to have coffee with some people. But Jesus doesn't want to just have coffee with just everybody. Jesus wants to sit down and have coffee with some people that maybe nobody would ever invite to have coffee. And so Jesus decides, hey, I want to invite this guy to grab some coffee. Hitler. I know when we see that name, immediately it brings a flood of emotions and feelings. This is an evil man. This was a bad, bad dude. This was a guy who led the extermination of people, innocent people, started a world war. This is a bad guy. And Jesus would invite him to sit at the table. But it wouldn't just invite him, he probably would invite this guy to join him at the table. Albert Einstein, a Jewish mathematician and physicist and scientist. He'd invite the guy that tried to exterminate every single Jew on the planet and a Jewish scientist. You see how scandalous it is? Okay, let's just take it up a notch. Maybe 40s, it's a long time ago, all right? Let's go to the 60s, George Wallace. George Wallace, governor of the state of Alabama, someone who did not believe in equality among people, someone who tried to continue segregation, someone who tried to stop, you know, equal rights. Jesus would invite him to sit at the table, but he also would invite this guy to join him, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., leader of the civil rights movement. He'd invite both of these guys to sit at the table, maybe the most racist governor in the history of our country, and the man who gave up his life for equal rights. Still not there? All right, let me take another step. Osama bin Laden. We all know him, that name. We know 9/11. He was the mastermind behind 9/11. He was the one who single-handedly thought up this plan to murder over 3,000 Americans, the worst terrorist attack that we've ever experienced in the history of our country. Jesus invited him to have some coffee, but he probably also invite this guy too. President Bush, the one who swore to protect us, protect the world. He'd invite the guy that literally murdered thousands upon thousands of innocent people, and he'd invite the guy that swore to protect our country and the rest of the world. Now listen, if you walked into a coffee shop and you saw Jesus sitting in a corner with any of these guys, you'd be like, excuse me? What's going on? Why in the world is Jesus sitting with those people having coffee, right? It's scandalous. Let me take it a step further. Jesus would invite the families of those people killed in that church in Charleston to come sit at the table. But he also would invite Dylann Roof. I don't know if they would come. He would invite them. I don't know if they would come. Take a step further. Jesus would invite the family of this female police officer that was murdered outside of Walmart in Orlando this week. But he also would invite the person who pulled the trigger. That's who Jesus is. Jesus invites those who are under the table to sit at the table. The same table, the same meal, the same end goal. And listen, Jesus made it difficult. He gave us this rule. Listen to this one. You'll recognize this. Treat other people exactly as you would like to be treated. He said, treat other people exactly like you would want to be treated. Listen, following Jesus was great until he said this, right? I mean, this is the golden rule. We teach this to our kids. It shouldn't be called the golden rule. It should be called the hard rule, right? Because it is not easy. There is nothing easy about that statement. And can I just be candid with you? I'm not a racist. I'm not a sexist. Never have been, never will be. But I really struggle applying this to terrorists. I do. I'm just being honest with you today, all right? I struggle. I struggle because I'm a man. I'm a guy who's got friends, got family, cousins, uncles, two grandfathers who fought in wars. And I tell you, any man who would hurt innocent women and children, any man that would hide behind religion, any man that would use religion to hurt instead of help, in my opinion, they're the biggest cowards on the planet. That's just how I feel. And so let me put it to you this way. If Jesus came to me and said, hey, Jason, I want you to sit down and share a meal with the people from Westboro Baptist Church. You know these jokers? These are the people that go out and picket all the time. And they picket fallen soldiers' funerals. It irritates me. It drives me crazy. I can't stand this group of people. I can't. But if Jesus said, hey, Jason, I want you to go sit down and share a meal with them, I'd be like, ha, I don't know, Jesus. I mean, I don't know if I can do that. But here's the truth. As much as I loathe them, they've never beheaded anybody. They've never strapped bombs to themselves and went in and killed innocent women and children. And so if Jesus said, hey, Jason, go sit down with this group of people, they're like, all right, Jesus, I don't know why, I don't know how, are you sure? Can I talk you out of this? And he'd be like, no, go. And I'd be like, all right, I'd find a way to do it. But here's the reality. I'm just being real with you again. I struggle applying this to ISIS. When I see pictures, images of pastors being beheaded, of Christians being crucified, of them handing machine guns to little kids and having these kids execute their prisoners, I'm sorry, I just struggle with that. But what does Jesus say? Treat other people exactly how you want to be treated. And then he takes it a step further. He raises the bar and he says these words. He says, love your enemies. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. Now listen, as a nation, we have a certain response to this, but as individuals, that response is different. It is different. And so that's a whole other sermon for a whole other day. I'm not going there today. But let's unpack this thought here just for a moment. Because you see, Jesus knows that when we pray for our enemies, it will help us love them. And the only way we can get to that point is with God's help. With God's help. So let me just talk about my life here for a moment. You see, in my life, I have an instinctive response and I have a reflective response when it comes to dealing with people in my life. You see, my instinctive response when I'm driving in a car and somebody cuts me off is, really? Right? I mean, you throw your hands up. You're like, really? I mean, seriously? You just did that? And you let them know. I want to let them know I'm not happy with their driving at that moment. That's my instinctive response. But I have a reflective response as well. And that reflective response says, hey, you know what? Maybe they have kids in the back and they're just a little distracted. Maybe they had a lousy day. So you know what, Jason? People giving you grace and you're driving, you should also give grace to them. You see, what I think Jesus is trying to get us to understand in this whole story is that we're supposed to put down that instinctive response and pick up the reflective response. Because when we respond like reflective followers of Jesus Christ, it changes the way that we behave and see our world. Listen, we never, never should judge an entire people group based on the actions of a few people in that group. Ever. We should never judge an entire people group based on the actions of a few people in that group. Listen, as reflective followers of Jesus Christ, we should never say all women are temperamental, you know, or all men are insensitive. No, they're not. They're not all that way. As reflective followers of Jesus Christ, we should never say all priests, well, they're predators. Or all politicians, they're crooks. Or all police officers, they're heavy-handed. You know, some people might be, but listen, it's not all. It's not a majority. And listen, as reflective followers of Jesus Christ, we should never say, oh, all black people are unmotivated. Or all Hispanics, they're in this country illegally. Or all middle-aged white guys, they're greedy bigots. That's just not the case. We never judge an entire people group based on the actions of a few people in that group. Listen, in psychology, there's this word. It's called transference. And what this means is simply this. If you have an experience with a particular person from a particular group of people and it's a bad experience, many times what we do is we transfer those toxic feelings towards that particular person to that entire people group. It's called transference. Say you had a bad childhood. You grew up with a mom who treated you poorly, verbally abused you, physically abused, was an alcoholic, and you have serious issues with your mom. And so anytime you come across anybody who looks like, talks like, acts like your mom, you transfer those feelings to that person. That's called transference. But listen, this is why I love this book. That's why I love the Bible. Because what we see in here is God transferred his love for his son Jesus to you and I. He loved Jesus. He loved Jesus with all of his heart, but now he loves us. And what he wants us to do is to take that love that we've been given and transfer it to other people in our lives, including people in our lives that we don't get along with or we might label as an enemy. And you know what that's called? Grace. It's called grace. Justice is getting what you deserve. Mercy is not getting what you deserve. Grace is getting what you don't deserve. And Jesus embodied grace. And when I close my eyes and I picture Jesus, you know what? I never picture Jesus in a church. I always picture Jesus somewhere else. I think Jesus would be comfortable in prison. I think he'd be comfortable in an AA meeting. I think he'd be comfortable in a rehab clinic. I mean, I think Jesus would be comfortable, you know, sitting in the front row of divorce court. He'd be just as comfortable sitting on a curb outside of a bar. Jesus would be comfortable walking down the halls of an inner city high school. He would be comfortable in a frat house and a retirement home. He'd be comfortable in all those places. And when I close my eyes, for some reason, I never picture Jesus in a church. And listen, I talk to people who are hurting in this community all the time, who have been hurt and refuse to step in a church because of people who say they are Christ followers. And listen, there are a lot of reasons behind that, and there's some stuff they have to own. But I hear story after story, and you've heard it too, oh, they're just a bunch of hypocrites. They're just a bunch of hypocrites. And sometimes they're right. Sometimes we are. Sometimes we fail to remember that we once were enemies. We once were underneath the table, and we've been invited to sit at the table. And when I talk to people in this community and say, that, hey, I don't want to go to church, and I don't want to go to church because people don't love you there. I can find love other places. I go, hey, you need to come check our church out. Because we love people at Christ Church. We understand this whole idea of grace because we know that we are all enemies. We all were at one time, we're under the table. But Jesus invited us to sit at the table. I mean, that's why I love what the author of Hebrews wrote. He said these powerful words, see to it that no one, who? No one misses out on the grace of God. Nobody. And listen, I'm just being real with you. I receive grace a whole lot easier than sometimes than I give it away. Just being honest with you. And I am so grateful for how patient God is with me when I don't extend grace like it's been given to me. Because listen, I know I want to love my enemies. I do. I really, really do. And I want to treat people exactly the way that I want to be treated. And I don't want any single person, not a person, to miss out on the grace of God. But here's the reality. Sometimes it happens in my life that my intentions and my actions, they don't match up. They don't. But my leader, he never messed up. He walked his walk. He talked his talk. He practiced what he preached. He did exactly what he said he would do. And when he died, and listen, I am not here yet. But when he gave his life on the cross, when he was crucified, and people heaped insults after insult after insult on him, what did the Bible say he did? He said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. But Jesus loved everybody. He didn't have a single enemy. He loved his enemies. And listen, this is what you need to understand. No matter who you are, you matter to Jesus. No matter who you are, you matter to Jesus, and he is not trying to pay you back. He's trying to bring you back. And the way he brings you back is he invites you to sit at his table in his home and share a meal with him. And where is his home? It's heaven. And what table is it? It's a table he's been preparing for us for over 2,000 years. And I can only imagine what that table is going to look like. And here's what I know. There are people here in our earth, in our world, that struggle to get along here on this earth. But one day when in heaven, they're not going to struggle to get along anymore. You know why? Because Jesus is going to be sitting right between them at that table. And so anytime in my life that I'm struggling with somebody, anytime in my life where I have someone in my life that I'm not feeling love towards, I have to remember to put Jesus between me and them. And when I do that, I can love them. Listen, Gator fans, 16 years I've been putting Jesus between me and you, all right? And it's working so far, all right? All right, take a deep breath. I know this is deep today, all right? This is deep, but it's important. 1988, there was a concert in Wembley Stadium, and it was a huge concert. It was about 130,000 plus people. It was a tribute. It was the 70th birthday of Nelson Mandela. And they had like the top artist of the day, all the top entertainers of the day, and they gathered together to pay tribute to Nelson Mandela. And this concert started early in the day with the biggest headlining acts in the world at the time. U2 kicked it off and went to the Rolling Stones, and Sting, and all these famous musicians played throughout the day. And it was one big giant party all day long. people were having fun, they were drinking and smoking and doing other things, and that happened all day long, hour after hour, band after band, and just continued on until the second to the last act of the night. The second to the last act of the night was this band known as Guns N' Roses. All right, and Axl Rose got up to the stage and he let it loose. Welcome to the jungle, and the place turned into a jungle. People went crazy, went mad. They're throwing bottles, they're dancing, they're having a good time. They just have let completely loose. They end their set, and then there's the final performer of the night, and it was an opera singer by the name of Jessie Norman, and she walks out on the platform, one solitary woman. And she has one solitary microphone, and she begins to sing. And when she does that, the crowd rebels. They're screaming, they're yelling, they're booing, they're hollering for other bands that they would rather hear, but she just continues on to sing. A couple seconds into the song, the audience feels quiet because they're hearing some very familiar words, some words they've heard before, and some of them have forgotten. And she just continues to sing, and a few more seconds in, a few people begin to sing along as it sets into the words of what she's singing. And everyone in that crowd that night realized that what she was singing about, they needed, they wanted. And she just continued to sing, and by the end of it, everybody was singing with her. What was she singing? Amazing Grace. Watch this.